There's a debate in space policy circles about a high ground. Some people oppose it as a concept, say that it's a meaningless concept. When you look at this in terms of gravity wells, though, I think that there's more to the high ground concept than a lot of people would suggest. You know, the potential for operating from the moon or from Lagrange points where the gravity well is very shallow compared to the fact that on Earth you have to operate from the bottom of the gravity well, which is very deep, does suggest significant advantages in terms of accessing other parts of the solar system at less cost and more responsibly than operating everything from Earth or from low Earth orbit. So, you know, the fact that the moon is now becoming much more significant astrostrategically, I think, is important. Let me now turn to the private sector. This is something new. Xi Jinping opened up China's private sector in space in 2014 because he recognized that China's state-owned enterprises couldn't easily compete with the rapid growth and the innovative aspects of Western's private space companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin and many others. So he basically made the decision, yeah, let's open up a private sector for space in 2014. Certainly, it has received substantial assistance from the Chinese government and also through foreign investment. But you could make the same case with SpaceX and NASA. So there is a second element to the competition there. In addition to the state versus state side of things, you are seeing the growth of a private sector in China that will compete directly with Western and in particular US private sector space. And that's really significant. Once they start to get momentum, once they start to see success, particularly in terms of the launch side of things, I think that you will see, it'll be very interesting to see how the American government then responds to that in terms of supporting their private sector. And so you could have a second element in terms of competition between Western private space companies and Chinese private space companies. They say that imitation is a serious form of flattery. It's very interesting that in April, the Chinese Academy of Launch Vehicle Technology highlighted this concept, which was essentially a copy of the Starship Super Heavy vehicle. It's fully reusable. The Chinese are interested in pursuing development of this. So, you know, the SpaceX will successfully test Starship and Super Heavy, get it flying orbital, I'm sure, this year sometime. I would expect the Chinese to be hot on their heels in terms of developing their own capability because the Chinese recognize the importance of reusability in terms of space access. And taking that one step further and doing something that we have yet to do is the Chinese Tianyun project, which is an aerospace plane, a dual stage two orbit aerospace plane that is launched off the back of a high speed vehicle in the upper atmosphere, flies into space, delivers a payload or does some other activity and then lands and is reusable. So this is a fully reusable two stage two orbit vehicle. The Chinese are thinking in terms of a test flight for this in 2025. Space is an operational domain. Turning to the military side of things here, the Chinese are developing a full range of satellites for military purposes. Beidou is critical in this regard in supporting positioning, navigation, and timing for the PLA. Obviously, their reconnaissance satellites and communication satellites are also vital in that regard. But they see space very much as an operational domain and are developing a range of counter-space capabilities that can threaten our access to critical space support in a crisis. The PLA rocket forces operate now as many as three direct ascent ASAT types that can threaten our satellites in LEO. And the Chinese have demonstrated both direct ascent and co-orbital counter-space potential out to GEO. But I think more significant are the soft kill capabilities that can threaten satellites in orbit without necessarily creating massive clouds of space debris that threaten space access to everyone. The key point I want to make there, though, is that Chinese counter-space capabilities are real. They're not some threat off in the future. This is the prospect of a space Pearl Harbor in a crisis, I think, is a serious risk. And that's important because of how we rely on space systems to function. And I'm sure you're familiar with this, so I won't labor this. But essentially, without space capabilities, we can't do any of these critical functions. We're deaf, dumb, and blind. We can't fight in a joint integrated manner. and the chances of us taking heavy casualties and suffering defeat in war is much increased. So the Chinese understand that space, in every respect, I think, is a critical center of gravity for our approach to war. The current indications are that they have three different types of three different types of direct ascent ASATs that are essentially missiles that can be launched from the ground up into space and collide with a target satellite. And those are operated by the PLA rocket forces. They have tested technology for such weapons being used all the way up to GEO, but they haven't actually deployed such technology. So at the moment, they can only threaten satellites in LEO with those direct ascent ASATs. They have also tested technologies that would be suitable for co-orbital ASATs. Once again, what they've done is they've deployed satellites that approach their own satellites to test out what's known as rendezvous and proximity operations. So they're demonstrating those technologies that could, you know, one day enable them to use co-orbital ASATs that could then approach one of our satellites and disable it. And we do know that they have ground-based counter-space systems such as cyber and laser dazzling and uplink and downlink jamming. But there's no indication at this point in time that they actually have ASAT weapons deployed in space. Yes, the Chinese are signatories to the Outer Space Treaty signed in 1967. Now, the key thing with the OST is that it prohibits the deployment of weapons of mass destruction in space. So obviously there we're talking nuclear, because chem and bio really would have no role in space. So no nukes in space, but it also prevents states from claiming territory in space. So in other words, the Chinese, according to the Outer Space Treaty, can't claim parts of the moon or can't claim the moon or can't claim an asteroid. That's prohibited against the Outer Space Treaty. If they did that, they'd violate it. Having said that, there are loopholes or grey areas within the OST whereby the Chinese could put a commercial base on the lunar surface with the purpose of extracting resources. That base quite legitimately could be staffed by PLA officers. And the Outer Space Treaty is vague in terms of defining what is military purposes, because the Outer Space Treaty says you can't use the moon or other celestial bodies for military purposes, but it's very vague in defining that. So I think that one of the efforts that's currently underway internationally is to try and establish, firstly, regulatory arrangements that make it more difficult to weaponize space, but secondly, establish norms of responsible behavior that then set the ground for something more, for new law or new regulatory arrangements that tighten the legal aspects of space and fill some of the gaps. And we would hope that the Chinese and the Russians would be on board with that. And the Artemis Accords, in part, are an effort to try and strengthen those foundations. But as I said, the Chinese have yet to sign up to the Artemis Accords, and they could be off to do their own thing. So I think that promoting legal, diplomatic, and regulatory efforts to strengthen arrangements is a very good thing. We need to maximize our efforts there. But we cannot basically invest in a strategy of hope. We need to back up those legal aspects with, you know, credible deterrence in space.